better and all these other good things. All right, so how's everybody doing? Let me see. So in general, one of the things I wanted to share with you all right now is that that you really want to be mindful about what you're seeing in the stock market. Let's just start with that in terms of just a stream of consciousness. There is some belief that the stock market could be headed towards some problems in the near future. I saw somebody that mentioned that the market hasn't been this overvalued since the Great Depression. And that was pretty, that kind of stuff stuck out to me. It was right before the Great Depression, actually the Roaring Twenties, when there was a lot of exuberance. They call it irrational exuberance. That's the technical term, where literally right before the big crashes, that's when you have the big parties. You know, it's just like the market's just like dope or something, where you know, that where the higher you get, the harder you fall. And so so investors actually get financially high, and when they hit these financial highs, it can cause significant problems in terms of what happens when you finally sober up. And so sometimes the sobering process becomes something that is very brutal, very painful. They call these market corrections. A lot of people call them crashes. And that's what some people believe we could be in for in the near future. Also, I was thinking about the another piece of it too, real estate, commercial real estate. Is showing some little chinks related to the interest rate, interest rates being high, higher for longer. And that also could cause problems with banks. Once your banks start to become unstable, you can run into problems with the rest of your economy. So just kind of keep that in mind, and just, you know, don't get scared, but just sort of be smart about your investing and how you move in the future, in the near and distant future. I do believe that you should continue to invest. I don't think you should ever stop investing, but, and I don't think you should ever live in fear, but I think you should be aware of what's happening in terms of what's going to occur and what the opportunities are. Now, let me hit another button here to make sure. All right, so hey, Yvette, how are you? Good to see you. I want to say hello to a lot of you in here. Henry Irvin, give me a yes if you can hear me. Let me know if you can hear me okay, if I'm coming through all right. Cheryl, Diane, Christian, Tarika, Sean, I see you. Dave Joseph, Donna, let's see, who else is here? I see Garnell, Freddie Davis, Ernest Hill, Ronis, Low 04838. Good to see you too. All right, and Khalil and Harmony and everybody else. So great to see everybody, and I'm glad you guys can hear me okay. All right, so here's what I want to sort of start with today in terms of financial consciousness. So I got up this morning, and you know, me and my wife get up early. We get up about I got up at 4:40 a.m. this morning. And I was very happy to do it. And that's because my habits have now shifted back. I mentioned to you guys a week and a half ago where I'd gotten used to to sleeping in a little bit, right? I'd gotten used to not getting up super early. So getting up early was very painful, very uncomfortable. But now it's like, oh yeah, this is fun. Like I hopped out of bed at 4:40 and kind of just started thinking about the day and getting ready to go work out. So I did my little run, and I don't really run that fast. I kind of pretend to run. I am not really a runner. If you were to call me a runner, that would make you a liar. So don't say voice is a runner, because I don't want you to be a liar, because I am not a runner at all. I'm a guy who jogs a little bit, and then I stop and I walk, and then I jog and then I walk. You know, exercise should be fun for me. I don't want it to be traumatic. And anyway, during this process, I was going through and just scrolling on different things and just thinking about, you know, finances and economics and everything, and looking to see what was going on in the world. And I saw this video, and this video was a video of Bobby Brown. And in this video, Bobby Brown was reflecting on his financial choices. He was reflecting on his days where he was the young and thin and energetic Bobby Brown, you know, my prerogative, Mr. Dance All Day, endless energy, extraordinary talent, everything else. And I thought the video was interesting, and I want to be very respectful when I talk about any of this, because actually there's a member of New Edition who's actually in this class. I don't know if he comes to when he comes to class or not. I mean, he's off, he's on tour and everything. But I thought it was really funny when I found out that he was in the class, because I use, you know, New Edition analogies all the time, like never trust a big button to smile, and can you stand the rain? And some of y'all heard me say stuff like that. And so to find out that, you know, one of the members of the group was in the class was kind of like, oh gosh, I'm kind of embarrassed now. But anyway, in this video, and I'm gonna try to find it, I put it on my Instagram. My Instagram is Dr. Boyce Finance. So feel free to follow me on Instagram if you like. If you like intelligent conversations, we have a lot of those every day. So it's Dr. Boyce Finance. In this video, Bobby, and I'm gonna try to play this for you. And I'm gonna kind of move around and see if I can find it real quick. And in this video, Bobby basically is reflecting on the glory days of when he had lots of money. And it kind of reminded me of that show, that BET show, Blew the Bag. Anybody heard of that? Anybody remember that show? We talked about that. Where he was sort of, Blew the Bag was a show on BET where they just literally would have mostly black men talking about all the money that they wasted, like all the bad financial choices they made. And it was like so hilarious. It was the funniest thing in the world. And that, at least that's the way it was presented. But I don't think that blowing your children's generational wealth is very funny. I don't think that selling your children into slavery because they have no assets, because daddy, you know, was getting high. I don't think that's funny. Maybe I take it personal because my daddy was getting high. That's why I didn't have a daddy, like, because drugs are more interesting than raising a child. I'm sure heroin is a lot more fun than dealing with a little big head, crying, screaming baby. Right. So I don't find it funny, but some people do. Some people find black men and they're in some of the parts of our culture that's a little bit ignorant. Some people find that to be absolutely hilarious, which is why people like Dr. Claude Anderson and Malcolm X, who are both behind me, and Marcus Garvey, you can see him also behind my head if you're watching on video. These were men that were very serious men, and Dr. Anderson's still here. He's not a past tense. He's present. He's here. I talked to him yesterday. He sends his regards, by the way. These are all men that I can relate to, because they're the ones who say, hey, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be a joke, black man. You're not supposed to be somebody's punchline. You're not supposed to be the guy who ends up looking like the class clown. Who taught you to be goofy? Who taught you to be ignorant? Who taught you that it was cool to be ridiculous? And so I'm going to play this video, and then I'm going to kind of give an honest yet respectful commentary of what I see here, and kind of help you understand this from a financial consciousness standpoint. And the dangers of a lack of financial consciousness and a lack of economic maturity, and what this can do to generations. So let me play this video with Bobby. I'm gonna see if I can turn it up. Hopefully you guys can hear it. Give me a yes if you can hear this video as I play it. And if you can't hear it, I'll play it again. Here we go.
Money was ginormous. I was bringing in so much money at such a young age. My dad didn't have to work anymore. My mom didn't have to work anymore. You know, I'd be driving down the street on the tour bus, see somebody in a car and like the car and pull the car over and buy the car and ride it throughout that city that day and just leave the car at the airport or at the hotel. Pay $50,000+ for a car and just leave it. Wish I had those cars now. One time, we're in a mall. And this black lady went into one of those little whatnot shops to show little glass figurines. And the guy treated her like Bob ended up buying the store and giving it to the lady. And went back the next day, told the guy he was fired. They go, you fired, you work for her now. I never thought in my life that I would be able to not only make millions of dollars, but to spend $1 million in one day. I was like, what? But do it. I spent $1 million in one day. I bought 3 watches, I bought a house, and I bought a car. And I wish I didn't. Money was giant.
Okay, now give me a yes if you were able to hear that video. Was everybody able to hear it okay? Let me know. Give me a quick yes. I want to make sure everybody heard it so we can analyze this and assess this, okay? And really, as I mentioned, sometimes I tell you guys this is the platform for intelligent black people, but it's really also the platform for serious black people. It doesn't mean we can't laugh. You guys know I make jokes all the time. I think there's a lot of things in life that are very funny, but at the same time, there's also a point where you have to be serious. Because if you're never serious, then you'll never be taken seriously, Right. So at some point we want to be taken seriously. And Malcolm X used to talk about this. He actually used to make reference to the fact that that a lot of black entertainers were chosen as black leaders. And what Malcolm used to say is he said, we should not be following behind clowns. These are clowns. These are people that make money by entertaining people, mostly white people. They're not serious. They're not people that are going to actually lead you to any serious place. They're just going to lead you to the next joke. And Dr. Claude Anderson also has tremendous insight in his book, which, by the way, his books are all at Powernomics.com. You may want to take a visit there and buy books for kids in the neighborhood. My wife and I gave copies of Powernomics away at our wedding. He says that there's a history since slavery of the black man kind of being loud, outlandish, and buffoonish in order to make money. And so what happens is that we look up to people that have the most money. People aren't financially conscious to understand that the idea of a person simply having money makes him more attractive to women, and it makes men look up to him. It makes little boys look up to him. So effectively, when you have buffoonish, loud, clownish entertainers who engage in outlandish behavior and they get economic rewards for this behavior, children look up to that. Children want to emulate that. Children say, why would I want to go be a carpenter or an accountant or a school teacher when I can go and I can be a professional clown and make lots of money by being a clown? Well, the problem is that there's consequences to being a clown, in that the clown is not rewarded to be mature. The clown is only rewarded to be simple-minded and loud and ridiculous, right? So I want you to assess, and again, I'm not saying Bobby's a clown. I'm not trying to be mean here. I want to be clear about that. And if I sound mean, just chalk it up to the fact that I don't always have, sometimes I misspeak. Sometimes I say things in a way that isn't intended for it to come out. Some people, because people meet me, they think I'm much meaner than I am. I'm a very nice person, but I'm very serious about this topic. And I want you to pay attention to a few things in this video. First thing I noticed was he mentioned that his mother and father didn't have to go to work anymore, which to me is admirable, right? That's very admirable, because that shows love for family. And also he said something also that I found very admirable when he mentioned, when the guy mentioned that he bought the store for the lady that was being mistreated. So he kind of felt like he wanted to use his money. This is that word money. This is financial consciousness. He either consciously or unconsciously said, now that I'm making all this money, I want to come through for certain people, right? And I think that that's okay. I think that that's actually a good thing. You'd be amazed how many athletes and entertainers go broke because they're trying to be so generous, right? They're not all running to the club throwing their money in stripper thongs. They're not all doing that. Some of them actually go broke because they're taking care of cousin Willie and paying rent for Aunt Sally and sending money to the deadbeat best friend that they had, you know, who's on dope, right? You know, give me a yes if you've seen this. A lot of us have seen this, and this survivor's guilt is very real. Some of you are living through this. How many of you, anybody living through this right now? Let me know if you're living through this, where you have a little bit of money and you want to take care of the people that are around you, people that are in your family. You don't want to forget about that. And I think that is a good thing. I think that is a wonderful thing. I think that's what makes you a good person. I can relate, because that's who I am too. I can't tell you how many people I save. I get asked for money about eight times, at least eight times a week. And I say no about five to six of those times, but then I say yes a lot, right? And so ultimately though, the downside of that survivor's guilt, extreme generosity piece is that it can deplete you. It's not a healthy economic system. It's not a healthy economic system where one person is giving and the other person's taking. That's not how economies work. Dr. Claude Anderson talks about that in Powernomics. He calls that the doctrine of unequal exchange. And the doctrine of unequal exchange will make you go broke. That's why black people go broke, is because we have a doctrine of unequal exchange. We give white people everything, they give us nothing, right? We serve them, they don't serve us. We hook them up with our money, they don't give us none of that money back, right? So they're living off two incomes, as Dr. Anderson says. They're living off their income and they're living off your income. So that's an example of the doctrine of unequal exchange. So the same way that we serve each other and serve our families, we also serve white America. We have been the ultimate givers when it comes to this relation, this so-called integration that exists in America. With that said, though, let's jump into another thing that he mentioned here that I thought was really interesting. He talked about seeing a car on the street and said, if I liked the car, I would just buy the car. And then I would drive the car all day and then just leave the car behind. That is not the first time I've heard a celebrity say that. That is not the first time I've heard somebody say that. Anybody heard of a name, the name of Money Mayweather? How many of y'all know about Floyd Mayweather? And the guy who's flashy, outlandish, very clownish, very talented, very skilled. No doubt about it. Skilled boxer. Absolutely perfect technician when it comes to boxing. But then there's the clownish side. There's the I'm going to go in the store and buy every piece of jewelry in the store. I think he's in Dubai right now, and everybody's and there's like this whole conversation about the fact that they're claiming that he can't even leave Dubai because he owes money or something. I don't know anything about that. I'm not going to speculate on that. But the interesting thing though is that this sort of impulsive financial behavior, as well as this need to just show your wealth by wasting it, that is kind of unique to specific cultures. That is real heavy in the black entertainer, black athlete culture. That I'm going to show you how well I'm doing by how much money I waste. And this actually, I talk about this extensively in my book, The 10 Commandments of Black Economic Power, which you can get a copy at drboycebooks.com. And I refer to that as economic immaturity. Economic immaturity, I've never seen this in any textbook anywhere, but professors, that's what we do. We conceptualize things and develop theories. So my layout of economic immaturity is basically a mindset of money that is reflective of that of a child. If I go to a seven-year-old and I give a seven-year-old $100 and I say, what are you going to do with that $100? What is the seven-year-old going to say? We've done this exercise before, right? Put it in the chat if you want to. Feel free to do that. He's going to say, I'm going to buy me some candy. I'm going to get me a new pair of Jordans. I'm going to buy me a video game. That's what a seven-year-old would say, you know, because the seven-year-old, he's not going to say, well, I'm going to put money in my 401k and I'm going to put some aside for a rainy day and I'm going to make sure that I pay the bills. I mean, we got a lot of bills around here, and then I got to put money in the college fund for the kids. The seven-year-olds don't think that way. They're thinking like children, you know, it's candy, toys, shoes, games, stuff like that. Well, what it's supposed to occur, And I'm not really sure, I don't know enough about Jewish culture to know if the bar mitzvah is kind of when they do this, but what's supposed to happen is there's supposed to be a rite of passage where the little boy grows into a man, or the little girl becomes a grown woman. And they learn that, look, when you get your money, you can still buy toys and shoes and games, because that, you know, it's okay. When you get older, just the toys change, the shoes change, the games change, but you can still buy these things. But before you do those things, there are more important priorities that have to occur, because particularly as a man or a head of a household or something like that, you are a steward of a space. You are a leader of a community. You are responsible for the well-being of other people. Let me know if you know what I'm talking about, if you get what I'm saying and where I'm going with this. That you preserving your resources isn't just important for you. It doesn't just matter for you. It matters for those babies that are depending on you. It matters for that woman that's next to you, or that man that's next to you. It matters for the people that you represent, that you love, and that you care about. And here's the thing. These ideas are not inconsistent with who I believe Bobby Brown wanted to be. I believe if Bobby Brown had received proper mentorship, he could have been that man. Because what I would have said, if I could build a time machine and go back to 1991, when Bobby Brown's at the peak of his career, dancing and singing and running the streets, let's say that he listened to me, I would say, you love your mother and father, right? And you want to make sure that they never have to work again. Yeah, of course, absolutely. And you care about people because I saw you buy up the store to help that little old lady. Yeah, because I have a heart for single moms. Okay, great. Well, what you got to also understand is that part of manhood isn't just taking care of people in the here and now. Part of manhood is taking care of people in the future. Because you got this baby. This little beautiful child named Bobby Christina, whose whole entire future is going to be heavily contingent on the choices that you make as a man. And I'm not going to even go into how Bobby Christina's story ended. And I'm not even going to touch that because y'all know how it ended. Y'all know what happened to Whitney and Bobby. Y'all know what happened there, Bobby Christina. But can we at least agree that different choices by the father could have had some impact on the outcome? I'm not saying that it's his fault. I'm not saying that it was a good thing. I'm not rubbing it in anybody's face, because this is tragic. This is painful to watch. But the choices of a young man affect his children forever. You know, you're 21, 22, 24, you're getting it in, living your life, shaking it on stage, you know, hip gyrating, getting into the drugs and running, you know, and doing all the things that Clive Davis is telling you to do to become a bigger star. Right? Clive Davis don't care nothing about Bobby Christina. Clive Davis don't care nothing about your future. He don't care nothing about your family. He don't care nothing about your legacy. All he wants you to do is be more of a clown and a buffoon and a loud guy, so you can sell more records and make everybody more money. That's what he wanted. That's what he wanted from Bobby and Whitney. I'm a skeptic on that. I don't think that any of those people cared anything about any of these individuals. But then again, the point that I also want to make is I don't think it's even their job. It's not somebody else's job to care about you. It's a horribly bad assumption to do business with people that are not from your own family and assume that they're going to care about you more than you care about your damn self. I don't even think that's realistic at all. So while I will be very clear and say I don't think Clive Davis cared about, I mean, for God's sake, he still had the Grammy party after Whitney died. He literally still had the party. He did not even cancel the party, right? So he dies in the bathtub. I'm thinking, okay, party's off. We gotta deal with this. No, he still had the party. And it really made me think about E-40, the rapper E-40, who's a brilliant guy. He had a song. It uses the N word, but I'm not gonna say it. Let's say Igga, and the chorus was like, "They'll find a new Igga next year," and basically he's saying that you think you're important because you're the man and you're famous and all that, but they're gonna find somebody. They're gonna find a new Igga next year. They're gonna replace you and find somebody else. And so really with Bobby, What I think that could be learned from this, and this is not me preaching to Bobby Brown, he's an old man now. Now all that's over. I'm really sort of saying, I think that when we have an opportunity that dies, remember the word poor, what does the word poor stand for? Poor stands for what? Passing over opportunities repeatedly. P-O-O-R, passing over opportunities repeatedly. So when you pass over an opportunity and you've watched some person that people admire just destroy their future and destroy their family in broad daylight, and you're looking over the corpse, the dead body, the corpse of everything that Bobby Brown's life could have been, everything that his family could have been, his legacy could have, he could have been a billionaire now, right? And you're looking over the corpse, I think you have to do an autopsy. I think you have to do an autopsy. We don't do enough autopsies on dead, broken dreams in the Black community. We don't do enough autopsies when somebody destroys their own future through drugs or bad choices. I didn't even talk about Bobby and the drugs, but we know what drugs has done to the Black community. And I found it really fascinating that Bobby, you know, dealt with his drug problem. Whitney died from drugs. There are other famous people. DMX dies from drugs. All these people die from drugs. And when people are memorializing these individuals, I find it so fascinating that all they can talk about is how great their music was. Sure, their music was great, but aren't you going to do the autopsy? Aren't you going to sit and say, man, every time we get a billion-dollar asset in our community, every time we get somebody that's got a chance to bust us out of this thing, we blow it. Something happens. What's the pattern here? Oh, it's the drugs. Maybe as a community, we got to say no to drugs. Maybe we got to deal with that, because that's costing us trillions of dollars. Because Bobby could have been a billionaire. Whitney could have been a billionaire. DMX could have been a billionaire. Mike Tyson could have been a billionaire. I could keep going with all the Suge Knight and Death Row Records could have been billionaires. There are so many billion-dollar opportunities that are being flushed down the toilet. And when we flush it down the toilet, all we do is we say, man, it's really hard to be Black. Ain't no money around. Of course there's no money around. Every time God hands you a blessing, you throw it right back in his face. Every time a billion-dollar gift gets handed to you, the culture takes that billion-dollar gift and flushes it down the toilet. Literally throws it out with the garbage. And then we say, well, gosh, Black people ain't got no wealth. We don't got no money. It's racism. It's racism, but it's also youism. It's also us-ism. It's also culture. It's who says that that is supposed to be our culture? When you have a culture that is destroying trillions of dollars of wealth in your community, you don't, you should not be embracing that culture. You should not be celebrating that culture. You should be running away from the things that destroy you, not running toward them. You do, you know, but I get it though. We do that. We just like we run toward the fried chicken, even though we know it got grandma's foot cut off and Uncle Rerun got going to have a heart attack next year. We'll still run when grandma says it's fried chicken. We run. I get it. This is why, yet another reminder why I said we need to do a financial consciousness class, because all consciousness is slapping ourselves and waking up and being aware and saying, man, I didn't know that I was doing that. I didn't know I had that habit. I didn't know that was my pattern. So part of awareness is not just analyzing who you are and where you're going, but it's also looking at where you've been. It's looking at doing the autopsy. Every time a dream dies in the community, we have to do the autopsy and say, damn, what happened here? We really had something good here. What's going on? Why is it that Bobby Brown, this guy who should be a billionaire right now, whose daughter should be running a billion-dollar company started by her father in 1991, is a old, tired old man. I mean, he's on that stage. He ain't looking good. I ain't gonna lie. Bobby looks, I worry about him when I see him on stage trying to sing. The other New Edition guys, you know, they've been in shape. They're all doing all the little dances like it's 1983 again. They need to get him a wheelchair or something. That poor guy's struggling. But Bobby, his life is not, I think, what it should be. And I'm not saying this to ridicule or to attack this man. I'm simply saying that maybe there's something we can learn from this. Maybe there's something about culture and what's incentivized. Because it all comes back to the money. It all comes back to the money. I have to bring it back for those who don't understand why we would discuss Bobby Brown in a finance class. It comes back to the money. Because if it wasn't for the money, half this stuff wouldn't have happened. Most of these things wouldn't have went down this way if it wasn't for the money. Whitney was hanging out with Clive Davis because of the money. Bobby was the man because of the money. Bobby's whole story is about the money, right? So what else did he talk about? Well, he was talking about his regrets. And if you notice, he was like, but you know, I bought a car and I drove it for a day and then I just gave the car away and threw it away. And he said, I wish I could have those cars now. He's like, rrr, rrr, rrr. Like it's a joke, like it's funny. And I'm like, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, that's not funny, dude, because now your grandkids are working at Arby's because you blew their generational wealth. God handed you a $1 billion opportunity and you flushed it down the toilet because you didn't even understand that when all those millions of dollars that you received, that was not your pocket change, bro. That was not money you were supposed to just blow at the club. That was your grandchildren's generational wealth. That was your big come up. That was your opportunity to transform a whole generation. You know, I mean, really, I want you to really think about this for a minute. I need us to process this in terms of culture. If you go to, if you look around at what influences young black males the most, among the top three or four influencers that you see out here, you know, when you're talking about young black boys is you see a lot of hip-hop artists, individuals that could be described unfortunately as degenerates, you know, the lot of drinking, a lot of smoking, a lot of womanizing, a lot of things that can easily get them sent to prison. I think I saw a group of athletes that all went to prison this past week, and that's not healthy, right, in terms of influence. Also, in addition to that, many of them have been incentivized for many years to behave like, you know, like clowns, right? To sort of be outlandish and loud and immature. And that's where you get a lot of these 45-year-old teenagers. That's what I call them, 45-year-old teenagers that are still trying to be kids, but you're like grandpa age, and it's kind of embarrassing. So that's our influence. That's one of our great influences for our young boys. And this becomes the culture. Now, I want you to look on the other side and look at some of the influential stories that young white males receive. Now, sure, they have clowns too. They have lots of people on that side of the fence that do things that are just silly and embarrassing and goofy. But a lot of their most influential stories also consist of people like Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates or Elon Musk, who were also in their 20s, who could have been running around, getting high, having, you know, sleeping with lots of women, rapping about killing people or whatever. But no, they were building these billion-dollar companies. Mark Zuckerberg, at the age of 19, was starting Facebook. He was building his legacy of generational wealth. So his rock star status that led to him being admired by millions of people was not driven by silly economic immaturity, like I'm going to go just buy a car and throw the car away, or I'm going to go and just spend all my money on drugs, or I'm just going to go just flush my opportunities down the toilet. It was built on, his legacy is built on this idea that he sacrificed and grinded and used all of his youthful energy building a company that's worth $500 billion or more. I don't know what the market value of Facebook is, but I know that it's probably somewhere about $500 billion or a little bit more than that. So my point is to say, what if we had a segment of Black culture where the Black men that we looked up to the most were not the loud, outlandish entertainers or the athletes, but let's say we had a big segment of Black culture, male or female, where you had people that became known because when they were 21 years old, they took all their extra money and they built a multi-billion dollar company that employed 300,000 people. I don't really see a lot of examples like that in the Black male community that get the same amount of respect and admiration that we give rappers and athletes. That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to put down rappers and athletes, but what I am trying to say, though, is that there's a process here. There's a belief that others have about you, which translates into a belief about how you see yourself, which causes us to end up saying, well, if you talk to a Black boy, like, who do you admire the most? A lot of Black boys will point out a football or basketball player, and then they'll point out a rapper. They'll say, I admire 50 Cent because 50 Cent has a studio and all that, right? Which is fine. I think that that's fine. But he also has done a lot of things that were very destructive and incredibly immature. And we've talked about that too. So this economic immaturity piece that I'm really saying is something that is very costly for Black people. And when I saw this thing with Dr. Anderson, and I think about what I saw with Bobby Brown back in the day, was I saw a guy who really, really, really went out of his way to be as outlandish as he could be, to be as loud and crazy and wild, and the wilder and crazy he was, the more money he made. So if you're getting financially rewarded for being loud, crazy, and irresponsible, why wouldn't you continue to do that? I mean, when you're 21, 22 years old, you think you're invincible. You think bad things can't happen to you. You think you're going to be young forever. And so you just kind of get caught up in the moment. And so this is also why mentorship is really important to combat these various forms of economic immaturity that can be very costly. I was really curious to think to my, I remember asking myself, I wonder who Bobby's mentors were. He had a father. What was his father doing? Was his father sitting him down and saying, look, son, you got an opportunity of a lifetime here, and I want you to have fun. I want you to live your life, but I also don't want you to destroy yourself or to destroy the people that you love. One day that little girl is going to grow up and she's going to need a responsible father. She's going to need a man in her life who made good choices when he was young, because that's going to give him the ability to come through for her when he gets older. You got to slow down a little bit. This is what fathers do, right? And this is why the breakdown of the Black family and the loss of the father as a primary definer of a Black household, the loss of the father, was also a multi-multi-trillion-dollar loss in the Black community, because the reason a lot of young Black boys are still boys even when they become men is because they never had a man to really slap them upside the head and tell them what a man is supposed to do. They didn't have that. I remember my father correcting me on multiple occasions, and I remember referencing my father's behavior to understand how I was supposed to behave at each stage in my life. If I had not had that as a guidepost, if I had not had that as a blueprint, I probably would have looked to maybe somebody on TV and said, oh, that must be what a man does. And then next thing you know, I'd be doing something completely different, right? So really, I think overall, these things all connect to your economics. These things relate to the decline in Black wealth in the Black community. If you've got billion-dollar entities like the Bobby Browns or the DMXs literally throwing away billion-dollar opportunities in broad daylight, you should not be surprised when somebody turns around and tells you that Black wealth is dropping. Why would it not be dropping? If you literally are, I mean, think about just how backward it is to have a culture where you show how much money you have by wasting money. Like I'm going to prove to you that I'm rich by taking a bunch of money and throwing it, flushing it down the toilet, or by going to the club and buying up 80 bottles of liquor, or whatever it is that I do with my money, or buying a car and just leaving the car and throwing the car away. See, what you got to understand, and this is true in economics and really in life in general, just like they say you are what you eat. You know, they say you are what you eat, like, right? If you're eating, if you're healthy, if you're eating really bad food, then you're eventually going to become a sick person. Well, the same thing is true when it comes to choices. You are what you do. You are what you do. What you do every day economically ultimately defines what you ultimately become. It's not about, so it's not about where you are. I don't care where you are. I don't care if you're rich or poor. I don't care if you, where you come from, all that. I'm not looking at where you are. I'm looking at where you're going. If I'm looking at a car and the car is in Ohio, but the car is driving 100 miles an hour toward California, that's not an Ohio car for very long. I don't look at that as an Ohio car because the car is not stationary. It's moving toward something. It's moving toward California. So I'm going to go ahead and anticipate that this car is going to be in California. This is actually how the stock market works. The stock market does the same thing. A lot of people ask that question. They say, well, how can a company that hasn't made any money have a $10 billion valuation? Well, that's because the market is anticipatory. The market is forward-looking. Investor thinking, the mathematics and everything and the psychology behind stock market / investor thinking is they're not looking at where you're at. They're looking at where you're going. Every asset on the entire stock market is valued with pretty much a variant of the exact same equation. It is called the present value of future cash flows model. And all that means is that we're going to look at everything you're going to do in the future, and we're going to discount it back to the present, and we're going to value you based on what you're doing and how well we think it's going to go and how fast we think you're going to grow, right? So I can look at a 20-year-old and who ain't got a nickel in his pocket, and I would look at his behavior and say, ooh, this boy's going somewhere because I watch what he does on a daily basis. What you do determines what you're becoming. All of you, everybody in here, all of us, including me, we are all becoming something. We are all becoming something. So the question I believe we should ask ourselves right now is, say, based on this behavior right here, what am I becoming when I act like this? What am I becoming? You know, I mentioned to you all that we're sponsoring a NASCAR driver, LeVar Scott. I talked about him yesterday. I'm super, super proud of this kid. He's 20 years old. He's one of the few black NASCAR drivers out there, and I just love him. And I just told him, I said, man, I want to get behind you because I see what kind of person you are. I see how hard you work. I see how serious you are. I see that you're a warrior. I see that you're a winner. I see you got the right mindset. So I'm not investing in you based on what you are. I know you're a broke 20-year-old. I get it. That's cool. I'm looking at what you're going to become. I think you're going to be great. You're going to be a superstar. You're going to get on top of the world one day. So that's literally how you think as an investor. You think about the future. So again, because your number one investment in your life that you'll ever make is pretty much going to be you, and then the other investments you're going to make are going to be people in your family, I want you to really look at everything. Look at culture and habits. Culture, habits, and choices, they're all connected. Culture drives our habits, which drives our choices, right? And based on the culture, habits, and day-to-day choices we have, the question becomes, what are you becoming? Based on what you eat every day, what you're eating for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, what are you becoming? Are you becoming a healthy person? Are you becoming a sick person? Based on how you handle your relationships with other people, what are you becoming? Are you becoming a person who's going to be surrounded by love, or a person who's going to be surrounded by hate and negativity and envy and all kinds of other negative emotions? Based on your finances, are you investing consistently in your future? That means you're becoming a rich person. If you're not investing, if you don't invest this week and because you just want to get to it later, or you think it's going to happen tomorrow, well, unfortunately, you're not becoming a wealthy person when you do that, right? It takes time for sure, but at some point, the habits have to change because the habits shape everything. And what I see with Bobby Brown was, I see a guy that was really trapped by culture, habits, and choices. The culture of, you know, I'm going to get rich by being loud and flashy and obnoxious and crazy and wild and everything else, and the world will reward me for that. That's the bad culture. And then you've got the habits, right? Drugs are the worst kind of habit to form because that's not a habit anymore. It's actually an addiction. And then you've got choices that come out of that. When I am high on dope, when I am high on money, and when I am high on fame, which Bobby Brown was affected by all three of those drugs, cocaine, money, and fame. All three of those drugs had him in a constant state of this weird euphoria that affected all of his choices. And all those choices, I bet you that if you were to sit down and do a deep therapy session with Bobby Brown and ask him to tell the story of his life, you would probably run across a regret every 10 seconds. I would be willing to bet you that everything that he thought was his wildest dream poured into what became his worst nightmare. I mean, Whitney dead in a bathtub had to be a nightmare for him. Bobby Christina dying early had to be a nightmare for him. The financial devastation that came with that had to be a nightmare for him. Drug addiction had to be a nightmare for him. Going to the doctor and having health effects from poor choices when you're young had to be a nightmare for him. So the interesting thing about life that's fascinating to me is that if you are not able to either have the discipline or have someone to force you to have the discipline to have a longer term view of your life, a different perspective, a higher level of consciousness, like in that airplane. Remember the analogy that I was explaining, being in the car versus being in the airplane? The airplane pilot can see what's ahead. Do you understand? The airplane pilot has a higher level of consciousness. They're in the third dimension. They can see what's going on. If they were in the fourth dimension, they could see even more. If they were in the fifth dimension, they could see more. This is where consciousness comes into play. So a more conscious version of a Bobby Brown would have been able to say, okay, this is 19, I'm looking down at 1991, but guess what? I got 1992, 93, 99, 2009, 2019, 2029. I got to think about all that too. So I can't just pour so much into 1991 that I end up bankrupting myself in 2019 and 2020. Do you understand? That to me is awareness. That is what consciousness is. And this is why also mentorship is extremely important, because when you have a mentor, the mentor has a level of consciousness you don't have. If Bobby's 21 and he's getting it in and living his best life, but he's sitting next to a man he trusts or a woman he trusts or somebody he trusts that's 50 years old, who is able to have a higher level of insight and consciousness and tell him what's down the road. Like, yeah, it's really great right now. The girls love you and stuff. But when you hit about 30, man, you start getting tired and blah, blah, blah. You can't dance no more. You start to pull a hamstring on the stage. And you got that kind of mentorship. Then that helps you prepare for the next stage. And this is why you can contrast, say, a Bobby Brown with someone like, say, a LeBron James. A LeBron James is a guy who he's always been a great athlete. He's always been the king of everything. He's just as famous as Bobby Brown was. He's just as talented. And LeBron could have been acting a damn fool. He could have just been a complete mess his whole entire life, but he wasn't. He had a wife and children because somebody poured that into him to be conscious and aware of the fact that, yeah, you could go have a bunch of babies, mamas, but that's not going to look very good for you when you're 40 years old. And when you're 40, you want to have that structured family that people can respect a little more than a guy who's just sort of splattered his seed all over the city because he was having so much sex, right? Or just other choices that he made. Now, I bet you, like another prediction that I have for LeBron is that LeBron is going to be similar to Michael Jordan in that. LeBron is going to make more money 10 years from now than he ever made in the NBA. He's going to make more money when he's 50. LeBron's going to make more money in 1 year than he's made his entire NBA career. This guy is on track to make several hundred million dollars a year, and that's because he spent time preparing for the next stage of life. Why? Well, because either God or a mentor gave him a level of consciousness to be able to see more than just the moment. Do you understand? That consciousness is what separates you from an animal. And what makes me resent America so much is that I really believe that they look at Black people as animals. I really believe that they want the Black man to live like an animal. Like, I really do. I really think that they want the Black man to just, you know, just go from woman to woman and blow all his money and eat the worst foods and make all the horrible choices, abandon his family and just act like a buffoon. And then they can say, see, this is what those, look at how those Negroes act. Look at that. Look at how those people are. They think about it. Do you know how many white men, I bet if you got them like secretly away from other people and made them really be honest. Do you know how many of them, if you said, would you want your daughter to marry a Black man? Do you know how many of them would say, oh, hell no? And a lot of the reason they say hell no is they say, well, these guys, they have babies and they don't take care of their kids. All these stereotypes, right? And what sucks to me, what makes me mad is when we embrace the stereotype. Because we know, all of us know somebody who fits that description, and that sucks. And what also happens is that society, because they have such a low impression of us, they will take those men who fulfill the stereotype and elevate them and make them the heroes of your community. you'll have a civil rights march, and the guy speaking at the damn march will be a guy who fulfills every negative stereotype about black men that there is. And so this is the challenge that we have. This is what we're up against, and this is why I'm so vocal about this stuff. I don't care if I lose friends over. I lost a lot of friends because people think I'm being mean, and I'm not going with the trend. I'm not trying to be cool. Well, I ain't trying to be cool. But you know where I learned that from? I learned it from my daddy. My daddy's like, I'm not trying to be your friend. I'm trying to tell you the truth. That's it. My dad, you know, one day I went on ESPN one time, and my father chewed me out after I got off ESPN. I was like, so did you see it? And he was like, that was stupid. Like, he's like, why are you agreeing with ignorant people? That didn't even make any sense. You know, he did, because he did not care about being cool and fitting in, right? And I really think that's the best type of freedom that you can have. When you get to the point where you're okay with who you are and what you're doing, and you don't need other people to always agree and always like it, then that's a really great type of liberation. Because I think we have a society where, due to low self-esteem that's implanted in us as children, we're trained to go through life wanting people to like us. And that's very dangerous, because sometimes people will like you only if you do the wrong things. It's no different from high school. Like, remember in high school, you had the cool kids, and everybody wanted to be down with the cool kids, but some of those cool kids are in prison right now. Some of those cool kids are unemployed, hooked on drugs, in all these bad situations. And so why would you want to emulate people that are losing, that are failing? And that's what I really want us to kind of process, is what culture do you want to be a part of? What life do you want to live? And when it comes, if you circle it back to the economics, the choice, the culture you choose will have a direct impact on your health, on your wealth, and your relationships, period. Your wealth will be directly affected by whether you choose a wealth-building culture or a wealth-destroying culture. And unfortunately for poor Bobby, he'd embraced a wealth-destruction culture. And as a result of that, Bobby's got grandkids that probably have to get up and go to work every day because granddaddy didn't manage the family resources and the family opportunity. And it's not just Bobby, though. I mean, you know, you have a lot of, just speaking on celebrity spending, I remember, like, I love Michael Jackson, though, by the way. My wife's from Gary, and saying something negative about Michael would be sacrilegious. And I thought Michael was cool. I really do. I love the family. But has anybody ever seen how Michael Jackson used to spend money? It was so crazy. Don't get me wrong. Michael made some good investments through the years, right? So no doubt about that. But the spending was so funny. Remember when they did that show where he went in that store in Vegas and stuff in the store was like $2-4 million? And he's like, I want one of those, two of those, three of those, four of those. And so he's just spending like crazy. And so what was unfortunate for Michael is that, you know, this poor guy was in his 50s and he was going on tour again because his only major source of income was going on tour. He had to make the money. And that's almost like the older boxers. When you see older boxers that are boxing when they're, you know, 40, 50 years old, stuff like that, just doing unhealthy stuff. And with Michael, what's interesting is Michael's wealth went up after Michael died because Michael wasn't there spending the money anymore. Michael's estate was taken over by people who didn't have to spend $10 million a month just to maintain a lifestyle. So what has occurred is that the wealth in Michael's estate has gone way, way up. And so that's another fascinating thing about economics, is that sometimes the family business does better when the founder of the family business is no longer involved. You know, it's almost like when Steve Jobs got pushed out of Apple. That was a bad decision, by the way. But there have been other scenarios where pushing out the founder made the company better because the founder's preferences and choices were not always healthy for the company. So with Michael, and I love Michael, I do, I always will. With Michael, it's like, because he's out of the way and he's not spending like a crazy man anymore, the family wealth is enormous. And I don't know how much that estate makes, but they make millions of dollars every year. And Michael poured into his legacy in a really appropriate way. And now, you know, kids 100 years from now are going to have a better life because Michael was here. So in that particular case, it was a scenario, in my view, where everything wasn't done perfectly, et cetera, because I do, again, I believe fame and money are addictions, and those things can really, and then if you compound that with something with drugs, it just becomes a complete mess. But most people can't relate to it because that lifestyle is so different. I'm not super famous. I'm only internet famous. But even with a little bit of internet fame, you'd be amazed at how people spoil you. Everyone says yes to you. It's so many things are easier for you than they are for regular people. But then also, I've been around mega celebrities. Like, I, you know, again, remember I told you talking to Kanye West was almost impossible because he just lives in this world where everything's so different. The amounts of money are just enormous, and the amount of access is out of control. So if you're not grounded, if you're not spiritually tethered to something, if your consciousness is not where it needs to be, it's easy to get kind of caught up in that to the point where it distorts everything about you that's human. Will Smith is, to me, one of the smartest entertainers out here, and he wrote a book, and he reflected on that and what fame did to him in terms of it literally made him depressed because he said it's very depressing to be able to have everything you want, and there's nothing that's hard to get anymore. And so like sex, like men have to work to have sex with women. He didn't have to work for that. And he said he got to the point where even sexual pleasure would make him vomit. He would vomit after that because it was like too much. It was like too much. So just count your blessings, right? Even when something is harder to get, even that's a little bit of a blessing, in my opinion. So always know there's a blessing in everything. And I want you to see that so that you'll be happy with the life that you have. Okay. So anyway, I'm done talking. I hope this conversation was beneficial to you. This is, in case you want to know how this links back to the economics, basically it's sort of this sort of general awareness idea that says that if we're aware of how our economics ties into other parts of our lives, then we're going to be better off financially. We're going to have better economic outcomes. And that's why we're here. And that's why you got up this morning to come hang out with me. So anyway, a couple quick things. Don't forget to get on the text list if you're not on the text list. If you want to get a notification periodically when we meet for Money in the Morning, just text the word morning, M-O-R-I-N-G, to 87948. Text morning to 87948. Also, my wife is going to join the ladies of Fly Nubian Queen this afternoon at 1 o'clock. We wanted to create spaces for intelligent Black women to share their voice. So if you'd like to participate or be notified, then just text the word Queens with an S, Queens, to 87948. And I will notify you all when the Fly Nubian Queens get together and do their thing. Thirdly, tomorrow at 1 o'clock or tomorrow at noon, I'm going to do an introductory Q&A for how to make money selling stock options. And this is what we call Prime 101. And so if you want to join us in the Prime program, you can get access. You can come on in to that. So just text don't text. Go to drboyceprime.com. You can take a look at the program to decide if it's for you. It does work. It's really good stuff. It's how I make my money. So if you're looking to make extra money, I think this is the best. This is literally the best way to make money I've ever seen in my life, to be honest with you. So feel free to go to drboyceprime.com if that interests you. Okay, guys, I'm going to get out of here. Have a great day. It was great talking to you. And thanks for putting up with me again. I'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care now. Bye-bye.